Welcome to Tribecast. I am Forrest Walden, founder and CEO of Iron Tribe Fitness. And on this podcast, I am going to help you find your tribe and maximize your life. Welcome to another episode of Tribecast. Super excited this morning to be in Atlanta in the offices of Booster with my good friend Chris Carneal, who is the founder and CEO. Chris, welcome to the show.
Forrest, thanks for having me. Honored and excited.
So you are king of culture. And this morning, I got to experience Booster U. And I just want to start there because you allowed me to come in and speak, but I was the one that was blessed just by the culture, what you put together. Give us just a quick synopsis of what Booster U is.
Oh, man. Well, I don't know if I'm the king of culture, but I certainly know it is our secret sauce. And love culture. I think it is the key and the heartbeat of every organization. It's why we have our amazing team. It's why they come to work every day engaged. It's why they perform great, serve our clients, and care for them greatly. So culture is the key. I'm sure we'll talk more about it.
We will.
So, a little bit.
Introduce yourself to the audience who has no idea who you are or what Booster is, and you know, talk about from humble beginnings. I saw the picture of you standing on top of your red truck. I have a similar one. How'd you get here?
Great. Well, I'm Chris Carneal. I'm 39. I've been married for 17 and a half years. My wife and I have four amazing kids. Family is most important to me. We have two daughters in middle school and two boys in elementary school. I coach as many of their sports teams as I can, seven sports teams last year. So I try at this season of life, not the case for the first decade of Booster for sure, but this season of life, I try to put the big rocks in the family bucket first, wife first, kids second, community, friends, and then Booster. That's just an advantage after 17 years to be able to carve a little bit of that time because of our great team. But let me just give a quick one-minute interview overview of my life, I guess. I grew up in South Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Dad was an attorney. Mom was a college professor. So educator home, both very involved in my school as a kid. Played baseball in high school and then had the opportunity to play in college at Samford University. And by play, I was redshirted. I got cut. Then I kept trying and made the team. Went to UAB actually for a year and played, then went back to Samford. So 2 years of Division I was enough. Everybody is the best you've ever seen at the college level. And I wasn't going to play too much more and miss some friends at Samford. So when my baseball career was over, I still love the sport and I love what it did to me. I love the idea of making a difference through fitness, through athletics. So I started my first official business, like actual bank account clients revenue type. Lots of ideas before and little side hustles, but all sports tutoring was the first business. And it was basically me doing one-on-one baseball lessons with elementary kids. Now I have sons that are this age and I'm doing it with them, but loved it because even though I was a kind of a no-name player, because I'd done it for so long, I just knew instantly. I mean, I could see a third grader take a swing and give him five pointers and he could hit the ball immediately. And that was just so rewarding because his parents would say, listen, this isn't about baseball. This is about self-confidence, teamwork, encouragement. So then I realized because of that affirmation from some parents that I've got a platform way bigger than just sports. I can use this business to fuel a passion in me to buy my now wife's engagement ring and to make a difference in the lives of kids. I had no idea at the time that that was the beginning of a story that would really become what Booster is years later that I wasn't writing, but it was really cool to see that being authored and the opportunities it presented. So one day, one of those kids, Carter Gannon is his name, and I know him well because 15 years after this moment, he worked for us and was a team member for 3 years, then later went on to grad school. But he said, Coach, again, I'm 20 years old. In that Crestline Field in Mountain Brook, Alabama, giving a baseball lesson. Coach, before we do the lesson, before we work on hitting and mechanics and different things, my school's doing a fundraiser. Oh, great, Carl. I remember doing those as a kid. What are they doing? Oh, we're selling magazines and cookie dough. Mm. Which one do you want? And this is 18, 20 years ago. I thought, one, I'm a college student without much money. I certainly don't need magazines. I don't want cookie dough. I just had the thought, is this what schools are still doing? Because I did that 15 years prior. As no one, and this is an incredible school. This is one of the greatest schools in Alabama. Mm-hmm. So the baseball lesson ended. I called my mom, the educator, And I called my dad, who also volunteered as the Booster Club president when I grew up. And when I was growing up in elementary school, we did a fun run that he helped organize through the PE department. So I said, do people not do fun runs? I remember that being a really fun fundraiser. We also sold stuff. But I know schools need money. Mom was talking about how schools need money and all the great things it goes to. Teacher salaries, electronics, smart boards, gym floors, playground equipment. But man, teachers are just worn out fundraisers. That's not their job. They're not trained in it. In fact, it's distracting from the educational process.
Totally.
So both parents were affirming there's something here. There's a good idea. If you could serve schools, if you can create a business opportunity. So that's all it was. It was just an idea. And then I started asking friends that had connections with schools. Hey, I've got an idea. Do you think this will work? Can I pitch it to you? Talk about it. I think I could put on a fun run as opposed to a product sale. I think people will give you, the child, a dollar a lap they run, and they'd like that more than buying a product they're never going to use. We'll give more money to the school, but you know what? We'll also do all the work. Let the educators educate. I can run an event. Let my team do that. So I literally went to 50 schools, 50 different meetings, friends of, parents of, cousins of, drove all over, and everyone said no. And they all said, we like the idea. This is a good idea. But you know what you're asking, 20-year-old? You're asking us to trust you with our kids and our money, the two things we care about most. And the idea sounds great, but we can't be your guinea pig. So if any entrepreneur knows, the first client is the most important client. And if you don't get the first client, so by a random God's blessing, running into Coach Bill Wilder again at a Birmingham Barons game and him saying, Chris, you know, I know we met a year ago, but do you think maybe in the spring you could possibly do that fun run you were talking about? Come by and just give it to us again. So by then, and after 50 no's, I had 50 opportunities to get the sales pitch better.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be honest, I've never actually done it, but I was 100% convinced. So Coach Bill Wilder, the 27-year-old athletic director at Shades Mountain Christian School at the time, said, okay, here's the catch. You got to guarantee me $3,000 because I'm going to cancel the car wash. I'm going to cancel the bake sale. I'm going to cancel all the other brownies and junk, but you're going to have to guarantee me the money. So, of course, I said, of course, I guarantee it. I believe it. And that was my wife's honeymoon money and ring money that I was guaranteeing. She's sitting in the room, and I'm looking at the ring that I was putting on the line. But if you have an idea, there's the moment you just got to jump off the cliff and go for it. So the school, it shocked me far more than them. The school profited $21,000.
Wow.
Raised about 30, used the rest to pay for expenses, made no money, but didn't care. I just wanted to try the idea, pull it off. Then they called back. Then I graduated the next month, went to grad school in Kentucky, and the same school called back. So I scheduled their next year run around my grad school spring break. Then another school called. Then another school called. Three different states, Florida, Georgia, and Alabama. So then fast forward another year, there's about 8 schools and I think 6 or 7 different states. And we're faced with, do we still stay living in Kentucky in grad school, or do we move somewhere and try to actually make this thing go? The reason I know Bill Wilder's name and think of him often is I call him twice a year, every August 15th and every April 15th, the first day of our school year and the day that he said yes. So I called him a couple weeks ago. Coach, wouldn't be without you. Currently have 1,000 team members. We're in all 50 states. We're going to raise schools about $80 million this year. And if you did not say yes to the goofy 20-year-old with an idea, we wouldn't be here. So thank you. And I think every entrepreneur knows that. That's why gratitude is our virtue number one, I think, is, you know, yes, we work hard, but there's so many people that gave us opportunities. And I'm really grateful for them, the team members that have come, you know, before where we are now, built this foundation and made us who we are and where we're going.
Ah, great story. So much we could unpack there. I do want to highlight, though, 50 no's. I mean, it's real easy to gloss over that and talk about where you are now. But I know for a lot of people starting out, handling the no's, handling the rejection, when you see something so clearly and you know it's going to work and no one can see the idea, that's a tough phase.
A gift / blind spot. I don't know. If anybody's familiar with any assessment tests, a little bit about me. I'm a hyper ENFP. I'm an Enneagram 7 with an 8 wing, and I'm a Colby 10 quick start. So whichever of those you're familiar with, that's me. So to me, it was fun. It was a challenge. I was 20 and 21. I did not have 4 kids. Did not have any team members. I was a college student. So I literally had nothing to lose besides the few thousand dollars I'd save for the engagement ring and honeymoon. So it was fun. It was a game. It was a competition. I wasn't playing Division I baseball anymore, so this was like, I'm going to make this happen. I will make the team. I'll pitch. I'll make this business work. And I just saw clearly in my head that it was possible. It would have been fun. I mean, if Coach hadn't said no, I don't know what would have happened. But at the same time, because I was going to grad school in Kentucky to eventually start a church was the plan and the thought. Part of me also thinks I would have done it 500 times because mm-hmm. I just knew it would work. I had the burning, white hot idea that I know would work. And then growing up in an educator's home and understanding a little bit about that world, I just knew that it would benefit all stakeholders.
Okay, and what I don't hear in your story is I don't hear you raising a bunch of capital, building some big corporate office, trying to launch this idea. Like, you bootstrapped it. Yep. There were days I know you were in a basement and wondering if this thing was going to work. So just a little bit about those early days.
Yeah, so if you come to our home office in Alpharetta, Georgia, you'll see our venture capital angel investment fund, which is 12 framed credit cards hanging on the wall. Back in 2003 and 2004, when the economy was in bubble mode a little bit, they were passing out credit cards on stated income and whatever. And I just, whenever one would quit working, I would use another one. And once they all stopped working, I'd start calling the credit card companies and saying, man, I just need another 10,000. Can you? And at that moment in time, and maybe the only moment in time in the history of the world that a 21-year-old could get about $500,000 in credit card.
Wow.
I don't recommend this, but it's my story, and it worked. So in doing so, I didn't have to give up equity. I was taking on lots of debt at a very high interest rate, but I just, in my mind, I thought this thing is so great. Equity is the most expensive form of financing. I wanna do it and own it all and go as big as we can. And so lots of stages from Birmingham and grad school. Before there was the basement, there was a good 2 years of my wife and I on friends' couches and relatives' couches and other people's basements that we were not paying any rent, just kind of moving around the country in hotel rooms. And she was pregnant with our firstborn, and it was awesome. We would not trade it for anything, but at the same time, we could not have done it forever. I couldn't do it now. It'd be unwise to do it now in many ways. But it was fun, and it was an adventure. I saw, and this is probably my primary message to entrepreneurs, I saw something in the client's eyes when we served them. When I told them what was possible before it happened, and then 2 weeks later when the fun run had occurred, we have a pep rally, and then team days where we're communicating and motivating and handing out prizes and so forth, teaching character lessons, then the fun run, I saw their look in their eye beforehand. This is amazing. You'll take work off my plate. You'll raise me more money. You'll teach character. This is good for my school. I love it. And then when it was over, wow, you did what you said and more. I believed it was possible, but I didn't actually think we'd profit 25 grand, 30 grand. We used to make in 7 or 8 or 10. This is 3 years of our PTA budget in a week and a half, and we didn't have to do the work. So I just love the look in the client's eyes of going over and above and pleasing them and allowing them to then. There, that was our marketing strategy. Was I'd say in a sales meeting, here's our rec letters. If we don't, you sign a 1 year contract. This is still true to this day. If we don't do a good job, I know you're going to tell everybody about it. If we do a great job, I'd love for you to write a recommendation letter. That's our marketing has expanded a little bit, but still the best form of marketing is a satisfied client that will tell their friends about it.
No doubt about it, and so consistent with what I just talked about at your event here. So you glossed over it, but let's just talk about where you are now, your footprint, your staff, the team you're leading.
Yep. So we do more than just fun runs, but that's still our primary offering, Boosterthon Fun Run. People can go to boosterthon.com and see what we do. They can go to choosebooster.com for kind of an overall side of the organization. We have a few other subsidiaries and cross-functional sister companies in many ways. But we've grown a lot. There were lots of challenges from the basement. We kind of got out of that stage. From the car to the basement. That was a big stage. And we actually could afford kind of barely a house with a basement that was the office. And so 2005, moving to Atlanta, 2006, 2007, hired one of the previous podcast guests, Court Sachs, my first team member, Jim Doggett, another previous guest, helped us with talent in those days and was incredibly influential, helping us build a culture, just a really great team. I'm grateful to all those guys and anybody that's come before this moment that's helped us get here. We would not be here without them in any way. Then in 2007, as we're launching Charlotte and Dallas and South Florida and kind of getting out of just the Atlanta Birmingham, and we're stretching to do so and using more credit cards to do so and buying equipment and hiring people. At least America's greatest recession since the Great Recession, the Great Depression, the Great Recession hit us. And when you're in the fundraising business in the middle of a very big recession, that's not the right fun place to be. So 2008, 9, 10, and 11 were definitely some stressful, crazy, tough years where, I mean, I talk about four or five different moments where I'm literally on the phone with the payroll company saying, when does payroll go out? Oh, today. No, that's not specific enough. What time today is payroll? It's at 5. Is there any way we can make it 6 o'clock? Because I know there's a $2,000 check that just hasn't come to the mail yet, and I'm calling the mailman, I mean, numerous times. Can you wait till Monday? What's the fine to wait till Monday? Picking up the phone, I'm calling my mom. Hey, mom, I need to borrow like $7,000 for like 6 hours until this check arrives. So lots of that for 4 years. Never gave up hope, didn't get, it was a challenge that I just told the team. I said, here's how, ENFP, some of this is blindness. I feel like the Lord's protected me from some, overly seven. We will at some point in the future look back and say, this is good for us. This is going to force us to come up with a more sustainable business model. It's going to force us to really deliver for the clients. It's going to force us to just build the business and mature it. And I didn't. That's what I chose to believe, not knowing what the strategy would be. But that's exactly what happened. We came up with preferred choice for different service levels, a sliding scale where the more schools raise, the more they keep. Some competition went out of business. Talent was attracted to us because we were still growing in that season. Even in those years, we're still growing 10, 20, 30, 40%. It was very tough to turn down clients, even though it was expensive to serve them. But we did. We survived it by, I always say, God's grace and a lot of grit by a lot of incredible team members that sacrificed and froze pay and, you know, pushed off bonuses and just did whatever it took. We believed in a mission bigger than us. Mm-hmm. We weren't just – the company wasn't just going to go out of business. We would be letting down our clients and their budget and that part-time PE teacher that really wants to be full-time and their job. So we'd be letting down a lot of people. So it was on us to say whatever it takes to serve our clients and to keep our positive, encouraging message to students that they are leaders and they are significant and they can make a difference in the world. So we would do whatever it took in that season. And then we got smarter and the economy stopped being horrible. Then we spent the last 7 years, basically 2012-ish to now, scaling nationwide. We just a month ago signed up a school in our 50th state. Maine actually just happened to be our 50th. We now have 5 clients there. So now actually national organization. We'll have 1,000 team members this fall. Living in about 45 cities all over the country. So
you've got a ton going on, and you're one of the most productive and efficient, and again, this is watching you mainly through Instagram and our connections, but you're able to manage a lot, all right? And there, I know there's specific reasons and rhythms that you're able to do that. Before we move on, I want to talk about body, I want to talk about balance, definitely want to get into being, but this is a unique environment just right now in this podcast. You've got a room full of high school juniors and seniors. Just give me just a quick definition of why they're sitting here, what they're doing, how unique it is, because I got to hear about it last night.
Yeah, so some friends of mine are in the room. My wife's here and a couple team members and about 12 high school seniors at Providence Johns Creek. My wife and I had a very unique educational experience growing up. The school that our kids go to is a K-8 school, and it's fantastic. We felt there was a need for a 9th-12th school that shared some of our values, some of the values that existed at the K-8 school. So I'm a starter, I'm a founder, I'm a, you know, let's do it. And we looked around, and geographically, there were a lot of schools that existed that met the values that we wanted. They just didn't exist within 40 minutes of our house. So as I started talking to friends, and my kids' friends' parents, they all said the same thing. We love our school, but, you know, we think high school is such crucial years. What doesn't exist geographically? There's a lot of – so one is the value-based school that's in our area geographically. Two, working with so many schools across the country and being the son of an educator, I just thought schools are so great in so many ways. At the same time, I'm living right now as a 39-year-old, at the time 35, in the real world, and I'm having to learn so many things about real world commerce, not just business. I mean, for whether it's for profit or nonprofit commerce that I didn't learn in those educational years. And it needs to be highly academic and educational. But if there's any way to teach some real world leadership, starting with knowing yourself and how you're wired. I mean, we just, as an organization, we became far more efficient and effective when we learned who we are individually so we could appreciate each other more and then build teams that complemented each other. So, man, what if I knew that I was an ENFP 3-3-10-3 Colby Enneagram 7 when I was 16 or 18 and not 28. That would have given me a whole lot more context for why I was doing things and how I was wired. I could have built more disciplines in certain areas. I could have explored other options. So we wanted to take that so we started having meetings in our house and with families and friends. And here's the idea for the school. And then this incredible school in Lilburn, Georgia, about 45 minutes away, used to be 20 minutes away. Atlanta traffic's grown over the years. Providence, which we currently have about 20 employees that went to Providence, and it's an amazing school. It's just geographically not the right spot for us and our family and friends. Their chairman of the board called me and said, "We know you're talking about starting a school on your own. Let's just talk. Let's meet. Sounds like our vision and purpose is similar. We're aligned in a lot of ways." And so I did. I thought, I want to meet with these people. They're incredible and very much want to learn from them so we could, at our school, enact many of the same things. Well, we kept meeting and talking, and we said, wait a second. Are we talking about a model that has existed in the business world for hundreds of years and in the church or nonprofit world for the last 30 years? Are we talking about one school, two locations? There's lots of feeder programs, but the idea of two high schools that are still connected to the whole, we'd researched in the country and we couldn't really find any. But as an entrepreneurial founder, I don't care if it exists or not. If I feel like it's a good idea and should exist, we wanted to create it. So our group of founders with an idea, coupled with a 31-year history of this incredible school, with all the academic rigor, with all the athletics, with all the extracurricular, and some of our fresh new ideas, let's combine them together. We did that 2 years ago, and currently have about 65 students or so, and hope to have about 100 next year. So it's been extremely rewarding. So the students that are sitting in the room that I'm looking at right now are required to take entrepreneurial economics in high school, along with start their own business and do an internship. So if anybody's listening, don't you wish, if you're in business, don't you wish you had that challenge opportunity in high school? I mean, gosh, I do. I would have learned from other people's mistakes and experiences instead of having to go through it. So we've worked it in the schedule, and Seth and team have created this incredible, robust program and process where they can do an internship just for a few hours a week. And this year is kind of the trial. They're doing the internship at Booster, which is incredibly rewarding. Many of them participate in the fun run as kids. And we're close geographically, and since I'm so involved in the school, to be able to combine the school and the business and these incredible students whose families I know, we're all neighbors, and it's just really rewarding and exciting.
Well, and what I take away from that is not only, I've heard it said, the trifecta of insanity is get married, have kids, start a business. And not only have you done that, you've added all kinds of things, including starting a school, which a lot of people say, yeah, I've got a passion for this, but there's no way I have the time. And so you're able to do a lot of different things. We talked about, you know, almost 20 different things that you're committed to last night. And so I know the only way that you're able to pull that off is to be equipped across all four domains in your life. So I want to start with body.
Yep.
I want to talk about what are you doing for your body and how does that help you show up more impactfully at work and at home?
Well, I don't know if Forrest Walden has ever lost a partner workout in his life, but you lost this morning because I was your partner. So I'm sorry for not doing my double unders quite as fast as the team that beat us. But 5 a.m. workout at your shop, the one in Johns Creek. It's amazing. I love it. I mean, as a Division I baseball player, I've always loved doing hard things. But, you know, I wanted someone to push me. But I'm, again, as a high extrovert, I want to do it in a community. So what you created just fits me perfect. I am not an early riser. I don't love mornings. I don't just naturally wake up at 4 a.m. But I've learned, studying successful people, that the most successful people get the most important things done before the workday begins. Mm-hmm. That's just a principle I've learned. Laura Vanderkam writes about it in her book on mornings. There's a lot of just studying people, what time they wake up. And none of them like it. None of them say, like, I love the discipline of getting up at 4:37, that's my tires screeching in, barely get there time. But I hit the 5 a.m. workout. I'm I'm not the, you know, the most bodybuilding type, but it's about more than just physical. It's mental, it's emotional. I get to scratch my competitive itch. I get to do it with friends. I get to do a hard thing. And I feel like I just did the hardest thing in the morning, and it's 5:45. Mm. And then I go to either the Waffle House or Starbucks. They're both right across the parking lot, either for a breakfast meeting, usually a day a week. The other 3 or 4 days a week, I'm by myself thinking about what's most important for the day. Getting some action items done, thinking big picture, reading something inspirational, writing a note of gratitude to someone. And then by about 6:45, usually I'll have a coffee or a breakfast meeting with somebody. I try to be home about 7:15, 7:30. Like to be home as often as possible in the mornings and read the paper and sip coffee with the kids as they're getting up, try to take them to school a couple of days a week, and then come back home, take a shower, and it's 9 a.m. and I feel like I've got I've been with my wife, I've been with my kids, I've gotten physical and professional things accomplished.
So you're a super high energy guy. You can tell just from listening to the podcast. So I'm assuming it doesn't take working out for you to have energy, but what that does is it helps harness your energy so that when you show up at the office at 9 or whatever, you are totally dialed in. You show up in power.
Yep, focused.
Yep.
Yeah, I just think there's something about mornings, specifically doing something physical, and the brand that you've created, I feel like it's the best way to maximize and optimize it.
Beautiful. And enjoyed working out with you this morning. We finished under the time cap.
That's there we go. Hey, that's 7 seconds to go.
That's right. All right, so let's transition into balance. I mean, it's been said, what does it mean to take over the world if you fail at home?
That's right.
And I know that you have a super successful marriage and kids. I got to spend time with you and your oldest daughter this summer out at JH Ranch, which continues to come up on this show.
Sign up. Do it.
Just talk to me about how you've been able to put rhythms in place to make sure the most important thing doesn't get pushed to the wayside as you, this hard charger entrepreneur, ideas a mile a minute. How are you able to establish rhythms at home?
Well, I'm married to the most amazing, beautiful woman on the planet, so that helps. I'm looking at her now in the room. It's highly distracting. She loves this. You want to get on the podcast, babe? Just talk a little bit. She should. She'd be your best guest of all time. So she balances me out. She is an S on the Myers-Briggs, so more in the moment. She's a 9 in the Enneagram. So she is exactly who God wanted me to be with, to sanctify me and make me the best of who I am. So we are very 100% aligned in worldview and purpose, but complementary enough in personality that times I might get frustrated that I can't just be exactly who I want to be. That's not the healthiest version of me. The healthiest version of me is knowing my gift set and being extremely aware of when I take that gift set too far. So balance is not a word that resonates with my personality. The word that resonates is rhythm, like you just said.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know too many perfect leaders that are balanced on a daily basis. I think in the aggregate, they certainly are.
Yep.
When you look at the year, oh, they did have family time. They did have, but there's weeks that are just nuts. I mean, I got back late yesterday from Boston for a couple days, drove straight to my daughter's volleyball game. We had dinner last night, was late. This morning was early. That's not sustainable, but I know that's the season I'm in right now. But this weekend, you know, we've thought about better ways to manage it. Date night tonight, I've got a lot of great options. I'm the biggest Braves fan on the planet, and I've got Braves tickets tonight, but I am choosing to go on a date with my wife because that's most important. We also will go to the Braves game on Saturday night, so that way we can do both. But date nights, time together, it's to me more and more every year, it all just comes down to the schedule. I mean, I think the greatest advantage of being a business owner or a leader is that you get to control your schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Too often, though, entrepreneurs and business owners feel like they're working for everybody else. And in some ways they are, and there's that responsibility. And sure, I get late night texts and early morning texts, but at the same time, I get to look out and say, yeah, those 2 weeks, in June, I'm going to go to JH Ranch with my daughter. We're going to take a family vacation, and then the organization can figure out their calendar around me. I mean, that sounds, but that's just the advantage of taking risks for so long is you get to plan the calendar around you.
And I think that's an important point because so many people look at that and say, yes, that's what I want. Then they step into entrepreneurship. They get the 50 no's. They get the 7 years of borrowing on credit cards trying to make payroll and like, what in the world? So it's a process, right? You don't just step in entrepreneurship and all of a sudden, I own my schedule, right? You had to work the plan.
When I could not afford it, and when we were on credit card number 20, we still took a family vacation. Mm-hmm. It was cheaper, and you know, we weren't eating out a ton, but that was just always a priority because I just saw people's lives that gain the whole world and lose their soul. And that's just, I saw it. I had friends and acquaintances and thought, no success is worth it. Not that everything in life is perfect by any means, but as much as I can control, I'm going to put the big rocks first. And that's marriage, kids, and relationships with friends, and then build on my calendar, literally build it around it. I mean, it just comes down to what I put on the calendar. That's the most practical.
No doubt about it.
What I say no to, what I say yes to.
Give us some granular examples about you as father. How do you create that intentional time with your kids? You mentioned trying to take them to school a few times a week.
Yep.
Obviously, your primary goal last night was to fly home in time for the volleyball game. So again, scheduling.
We made our company trip schedule. I knew the volleyball schedule first, and I needed to land 2 hours beforehand, and we worked backwards. This is not true for everybody, but for those that are athletes, if possible, coaching is just such a great way to spend time with your kids. If you like that, if they like that. You know, my kids won't all be superstar athletes. It doesn't really matter. But at the age they're now, I coached 7 teams last year, and it was tiring and, you know, frustrating at times. But, man, I got to spend 2 hours a day, a week at least, with time with them and their friends. So that was just super crucial. So if you can coach a kid's team, try to schedule it and put other stuff around it. And to do so, you need to wake up early because you got to, you know, practices usually start in the afternoon earlier. That's one. I have lots of different calendars. I'm always recording things. Some of these habits that I've developed are not intuitive. They do not match the ENFP7 pattern. I build them to complement deficiencies in my personality. Mm-hmm. They are a guard gate against me as a high P, let's wing it, let's figure it out in the moment. That's just how you let people down. And that's how you don't become successful. I want to use that as a strength when it comes to pivoting and let's adapt and let's change in the moment. But if that's just the pattern of your life, people are going to be frustrated with you. And you'll be frustrated with yourself because you just won't capture every opportunity. I want to capture every opportunity. I want to do that so much, sometimes that's not healthy. I need to just let things come and, you know, not overly schedule at times. But I've got a daily checklist of habits that I've developed that are keystone habits that I record every day. It's an Excel I created. People always ask me to send it to them. I think there's a power of building your own Excel. Mm-hmm. You build your own Excel. So literally the left column, the Y-axis is every day of the year. Goes back about 5 years. The X-axis is the habits to me that are the most needle moving in terms of my life. So when I started this about 5 years ago, I listed 30 possible habits that could make a difference in my life. And then I realized there's some things that are great habits, but it's not a keystone habit. It's not sustainable to do them all, and it doesn't affect me or my family or those I love enough. Reading something inspirational in the morning workout, date night, family dinner, notes of gratitude. Those are the 5 that in this season are the most important that I record every day. It's a scoreboard, and on my Excel I have 0 or 1, 0 or 1, and then every month and every quarter I'll tally up and I'll see where I was, and now I have enough of a record to see, it's, you know, 1 date night this month. That's why my marriage isn't as good as it should be. But you know what? That needs to be too. So then I goal set for the year, and I have a running Excel that shows me the average that I'm currently at. Anyway, that's one Excel. That's the daily pulse.
I can't tell you how similar that is to my pattern. I mean, I score it and everything. So
really,
love
we need
it.
To compare Excels.
Yeah.
There's a big business opportunity out there for creating a really cool app. I have a friend that's actually working on one to do it. But the second is a life Excel. And it's one every year. Each column is a year on the y-axis, and it goes till I'm 90. I've got the T0 app that tells me how many days I have left in life, and here it is. I'm 40 and 215 days. My oldest graduates high school in 4 years, 262 days. We're empty nesters in 11 years.
Wow.
So it's just constantly recording what matters most. And
what's the name of that app?
T0. There's a lot that are just free apps that just kind of count down life. I've got 51 years, God willing, that'd be amazing, you know, left on the planet. So what can I do with it to change the world and make a difference? So the Life Excel, I record what I call Kairos moments. Kairos is a Greek word that means moments that matter, not chronology, time of the clock, not 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock, but like these are big moments. So I put the JH Ranch on my Life Excel 4 years ago. Mm. I have Emma's JH Ranch, my second daughter, in 2021. It's already on the calendar. Doesn't mean I can't change it or move it, but time just catches up with you.
It does.
And I think I've talked to so many leaders. I'm shocked that more people don't do this. Like, I can't believe I'm 40. Can't believe my kids. Well, you saw it coming. I mean, time, we're all used to it. Your kid is 11 and they're graduating in 7 years. So you maybe have 7 summers left with a child. That's 49 weeks of days of vacation. If you took like a 7 day, well, just plan it out. Dream big. In 4 years, we want to go here. We want to do this. And it changes all the time. My wife and I are always talking about, well, should we do that this year? Should we do this summer? Do something international? Do something domestic? Do we do something missional versus just vacation? But writing down things that you feel like are important to do sometime in the future for you and those you love, just writing them down. It's like a to-do list. Just put it on paper or a goal. Write it down. And I'm constantly changing it. But it has my age, my kids' age, my grandkids' ages, company number of team members. And it's just the compound interest of life. People manage their money this way. But far more valuable than money is time. Mm. And no one manages their time, thinks about time, like they think about money. I mean, there needs to be a Dave Ramsey organization about time. There's your big idea of the day, entrepreneurs, that teaches people this is how the most productive, most happy, most joyful people in life build habits around time.
Mm. Man, well said. I'm fired up. I want to transition from that into the being domain. You mentioned you initially thought it was going to be a church coming out of school. Now you're this entrepreneur with all this leadership. How do you protect and nurture your relationship with Christ that I know is a big part of your story and undergirds every domain of your life and leadership?
3 years of seminary. And the idea of church planning was that was my way to combine the entrepreneurial itch with, at the time, what I thought was the primary way, it might be, to change the world. I could go into another podcast another time. I had the wrong worldview, the wrong theology, the wrong framework. I thought that the nonprofit people changed the world, the for-profit people gave money to those people to do it. And there's many incredible nonprofit people that change the world and are efficient and excellent in many ways. But there's a lot of for-profit people that also can change the world. So to me, the blending of those two worlds was just a big discovery, kind of in the seminary startup. As I was doing both, I'm thinking, I'm making a difference in these people's lives. And this is really fueling for me. So that's external. Internally, personally, I love reading scripture. I mean, I've got a group of guys, my best friends. We do a Bible study every other week. We're currently going through Ephesians. It's just one chapter a week. I think there's so many things that could be beneficial for me personally at this moment in time. Just reading the word is really healthy and life-giving to me, and not just people talking about the word, not just commentary on it, not just books about it, but like actual. So I'll read for the next 2 weeks. I'll read Galatians 2 every single day, sometimes twice a day. And it's amazing. The 14th time reading it, something I've been familiar with forever, something new will pop out. And that'll be what I need to hear for the day, or what I need to pray about for the day, or think about, or work on. So we started the big idea with that Bible study group a couple years ago. The Gentleman is our group name. We were just friends that hung out, that did life together, and our spouses are friends. And we thought, Anybody been in a Bible study in recent days? And the first thought was, maybe I should join one. Usually, that, and that's always great, but usually that's with a group of people that you don't quite know a couple of. And that might be the exact perfect decision. We thought, we do so much of life together. Let's do that with this group. We know each other's stories so well. We know each other's spouses and kids, and you're the guys we hang out at the Braves game with and, you know, do vacations with. Let's go deeper spiritually with each other. So just that decision has been really fruitful. Take the existing, so just an idea, who are you the best friends with? Could you go deeper spiritually with that group? It doesn't necessarily have to be a different new group. So that's been very beneficial.
I want to pause right there because that's been a fundamental theme of this show is too often entrepreneurs, leaders live in isolation. Mm. And we cannot do this life in isolation. And so I'm always talking about the intro to the show is find your tribe. And what I'm talking about that is who are you going to surround yourself with? And so what I hear you saying is you know that you can't do life alone. And so you're going to say, all right, I've already got these best friends.
Yep.
Let's match that up and go deeper spiritually. And I have something very similar. You rattled off half of them when you talked about previous guests.
Yep.
But the gathering sounds very similar to the gentleman. And so many entrepreneurs that I meet with are isolated. They have no one to talk to. They can't be real with anybody. So accountability is such a huge part.
And that's on them. They need to find it. They got to find it. It should be one of the top five priorities of the year. Who do I feel like shares my perspective? Maybe sits in my seat, maybe owns their own company. It took a few years for us. We were in that season, isolated for a while, and my wife as well, just because business can become, you know, all encompassing.
Yep.
But, you know, community is so crucial, and I think it's up to the leader. You do it for business, right? So create the group and do it. Forrest, I think you are the average of, maybe better put, the sum of the five people you surround yourself with. Mm-hmm. So not to be exclusive of other friends and acquaintances, but my core group, I want them to be the five people that I want to be like most. And want to hang out with and do life with, and the truth is, I do become like them because that's who I'm spending time with. So, I need to fire a friend or move into a different circle or find someone you really admire and just say, I'm going to go develop a friendship with them because I really think they're amazing and I want to be like them.
I had a coach once who came to that realization that his friends were not the right friend group, and he changed his voicemail to, "Hey, this is Jimmy. If I don't call, I'm making some changes in my life. If I don't call you back, you're one of them." So maybe that's not the approach, but sometimes it takes a little radical amputation. Right. All right. So I got one more specific question in being, how do you nurture spiritual development in your children? And like, I know it's easy to do the church thing and say, well, that's, but I know they need to be hearing it at home. Yep. Are there any rhythms there? And JH was a big part of that. I know.
Well, having an amazing wife that has great conversations with our kids is number one. You know, we've done recently, the past year or so, one of our values, we've just shifted in Booster to virtues. And our first one is gratitude. I think it's the foundation of all virtues. So I wanted to take stuff we're doing at work that's making a difference in our lives home. So instead of, we protect family meal time, try to do three a week, record it, family dinner. If you do family dinner, you got the time, you got the conversation, you got, it kind of happens. So that's a keystone habit for us. Some weeks we don't, some weeks we try to overload it. But instead of just tell me about your day or what's the highs and lows or to give me an update, what we started doing, not every time, but often, every other meal is, let's start dinner with tell me what you're grateful for. We've got a glass vase in the middle of the table, and we pass out gratitude cards. And our kids and Lindy and I will write on our cards, what are we grateful for? It might be in the moment or the day or the season. And then we go around and we read it and we drop it in there. So now we've got about a half full vase of things we're grateful for. So if we ever feel discouraged, we'll just pull one out. Wow, that was last week. So talking about what we're grateful for, especially in a 2019 life where you could either be entitled or disenfranchised in certain ways, I think gratitude is a solution to a lot of things.
That is super practical. I know something I can take home. Anyone listening, I mean, you're already there at the family dinner table. Super practical. Love it. Chris, man, it's been an awesome conversation. So many areas I could dive deeper in, but I know you're about to go lead a big meeting on the back of the one we just did, right? So this is
home
your management
meeting.
Team?
This is the entire home office once a month. We have a home office. We pull everybody together. Anybody that's in the field is welcome to stream in. So we'll probably have 120 in the room and a couple hundred streaming in. We give business updates, some highlights. We're big on celebrations. We want to celebrate the right behaviors. What gets celebrated gets reproduced. So we're really good at celebrating. We'll celebrate some things that are important. We want team members to reproduce.
And you may hear the music in the background. This place is rocking. There's scooters outside the door. I mean, like a really cool environment. Chris, love to have you on the show. Thanks so much for making some time for us.
Thanks for the opportunity. Congratulations to you, and look forward to continuing our friendship. Thanks, Forrest.
Thank you.